day. They found his truck and his glasses on the ground next to the truck. You know, those glasses that you see him carrying around all the time? Six turns to look inside the back door.
Wait, those are his dad's?
Yeah. And so the deal is that Sam is pretty convinced he was abducted by aliens, which I always thought was crazy, but I don't know. I let him go on believing it because who am I to crush the dude's hope of finding his dad again? I was waiting for Sam to tell you all this, but I just read Henri's letter, and you wouldn't believe what was in there.
What?
I tell her everything. About Sam's dad being a Lorik ally who met Henri and me when the ship landed, why Henri moved us to paradise. Six slides off the top of the picnic table and lands awkwardly on the bench.
That is just so totally random that Sam is here, in there.
I don't think it is. I mean, think about it. It just so happens that of all the people in paradise I'm drawn to for a best friend, it happens to be Sam. I think we were destined to meet.
Maybe you're right.
Pretty cool that his dad helped us that night, right?
The coolest.
Remember when he said he had these feelings growing inside him about being with us?
I do.
But here's the thing. In Henri's letter, he says that Sam's dad actually was abducted, or maybe even killed, by the Mogadorians. We sit in silence, watching the sun slowly come up over the horizon. Bernie Kosar jogs out of the forest and rolls onto his back to have his belly rubbed.
Hey there, Hadley.
He flips onto his feet instantly when I say it, tilting his beagle head.
Yeah, I say, jumping down to scratch his chin with both hands. I know.
Sam walks out. His eyes are red. He sits next to Six on the bench.
Hi, Hadley,
Sam says to Bernie Kosar. BK barks in response and licks his hands.
Hadley?
Six asks. The dog barks again in approval.
I always knew it, Sam says. Always. The day he disappeared.
You were right all this time, I say.
Do you mind if I read the letter?
Six asks. Sam hands it to her. I aim my right palm at the front page and turn on its light. She reads the letter in its radiance, then folds the pages and hands them back.
I'm really sorry, Sam, she says.
I add, Henri and I wouldn't have survived if it wasn't for your dad. Six then turns to me.
You know, it's ridiculous that your parents were Liren and Lara, or it's ridiculous I didn't realize that myself. Do you remember me from Lorien, John? Your parents and my parents, their names were Arun and Lin. They were best friends. I know we weren't around our parents all that often, but I remember going to your house a few times. You were just a toddler at the time, I think.
It takes me a few seconds to remember what Henri once told me. It was the day Sarah had gotten back from Colorado, the day we confessed being in love with one another. After she left, Henri and I were eating dinner, and he said,
Though I don't know her number, or have any idea where she is, one of the children who came to Earth with us was the daughter of your parents' best friends. They used to joke that it was fate that the two of you would end up together.
I almost tell Six what Henri said, but remembering how that conversation came about because of my feelings for Sarah brings back the same guilt I've felt since Six and I went for our walk.
Yeah, that is pretty crazy. I don't really remember it, though, I say.
Regardless, this is some heavy stuff about the elders and how we're supposed to assume their roles. No wonder the Moogs are so relentless, she says.
Definitely makes sense.
We have to go back to paradise, Sam interrupts.
Yeah, right, Six laughs. What we need to do is find the others somehow. We need to get back on that laptop, train some more.
Sam stands.
No. I'm serious, guys. We have to go back. If my dad left something behind, that transmission device, I think I know how to find it. When I was 7, he told me that my future was mapped on the sundial. I would ask him what he was talking about, and he'd just say that if the dark stars ever fell, I was supposed to find the Ennead and read the map by my birth date on the sundial.
What's an Ennead? I ask.
It's a group of 9 deities in Egyptian mythology.
9? Six asks. 9 deities?
And what's sundial? I ask.
It's starting to make sense to me now, Sam says.
He begins walking around the picnic table as he puts it together in his head, Bernie Kosar nipping at his heels.
I used to get so frustrated because he was always saying all this weird stuff that only he understood. A few months before he disappeared, my dad dug a well in our backyard and he said it would collect the rainwater from the gutters and whatever. But after the concrete was poured, he put this elaborate-looking sundial on the stone lid. Then he stood looking down at the well, and he said to me, "Your future's mapped on the sundial, Sam."
"And you never checked it out?" I ask.
"Sure I did. I twisted the sundial around, trying my date and time of birth and a few other things, but nothing ever happened. I thought it was just a stupid well with a sundial on it after a while. But now that I read Henri's letter, the part about the dark stars, I know that it has to be some kind of clue to all this. It's like he told me without telling me,"
Sam beams.
"He was so smart."
"So are you," I say. "This could very well be suicide, us going back to paradise. But I don't think we have much of a choice now."
Chapter 19. I wake with clenched teeth, a sour taste in my mouth. I tossed and turned all night, not only because the chest is finally in my possession, and I'm anxious to try to talk Adelina into opening it with me this morning, but also because I revealed too much to too many people. I put my legacies on full display. How much would they all remember? Will I be exposed before breakfast? I sit up and see Ella in her bed. Everyone is still asleep in the room, except for Gabby, La Gorda, Delfina, and Bonita. Their beds are empty. My feet are about to touch the ground when Sister Lucia appears in the doorway, her hands on her hips, her mouth twisted into a frown. We make eye contact, and I lose my breath. But then she takes a couple steps backwards and allows the 4 girls from the nave to wobble into the room, dazed and bruised, their clothes ripped and dirty. Gabby stumbles to her bed and falls face first onto it, the pillow enveloping her head. La Gorda rubs her double chin and lies back onto her bed with a grunt, and Bonita and Delfina slowly crawl under their covers. As soon as all 4 girls are motionless, Sister Lucia yells that it's time to get up.
"And that means everyone!"
As I try to pass by Gabby on the way to the bathroom, she flinches. La Gorda stands at the mirror inspecting the discoloration of her skin. When she sees my reflection over her shoulder, she immediately turns on the faucet and tries to focus on washing her hands. I can get used to this. I don't really want to intimidate people, but I like the idea I might be left alone. Ella skips out of one of the bathroom stalls and waits her turn at the sinks to wash up. I worry that she's going to be scared of me because of what I did in the nave, but the moment she sees me, Ella dramatically flexes her right hand over her head. I lean into her ear. "So you're okay?"
"Thanks to you,"
she says loudly. I catch LaGorda's eyes in the mirror.
Hey, I whisper. Last night is our little secret. Everything that happened last night is our secret, okay? Don't tell anyone.
She puts her finger to her closed lips, and I feel better. But there's something about the way LaGorda looked at me that doesn't sit well. I'm so preoccupied by what might be in the chest that I forego my morning internet search for news on John and Henri Smith. I don't have the patience to wait for morning mass to see Adelina, so I walk from room to room looking for her, but she's nowhere to be found. The first bell rings for morning mass. I shuffle in beside Ella in one of the last rows and wink at her. I locate Adelina in the front row. Halfway through mass, Adelina looks over her shoulder and makes eye contact with me. When she does, I point up to the nave's nook where she hid the chest so many years ago. Her eyebrows raise. I couldn't understand what you were saying, Adelina says after mass. The two of us stand under a stained glass window of St. Joseph on the left side of the nave, and we're bathed in a patchwork of muted yellows, browns, and reds. Her eyes match the seriousness of her posture. I found the chest.
Where?
I nod my head up and to the right.
I am the one who was supposed to decide when you're ready. And you are not ready. Not even close, she says angrily.
I pull my shoulders back and set my jaw.
I was never going to be ready in your eyes because you stopped believing, Emelina.
The name catches her off guard. She opens her mouth and stops before letting loose whatever tirade is on her tongue.
You have no idea what I'm going through in here with these other girls. While you're walking around holding onto your Bible and praying and counting the beads on your rosary, you don't care at all that I'm getting bullied, that I have just one friend, that all the sisters hate me, and that there's a whole world out there that I'm supposed to be defending. Two worlds, actually. Lorien and Earth need me, and they need you, and I'm holed up in here like an animal in the zoo, and you don't even care. Of course I care.
I start to cry.
No, you don't! No, you don't! Maybe you cared back when you were Odette, and maybe a little when you were Emelina. But ever since you've been Adelina, and I've been Marina, you haven't cared about me or the other eight, or what we're supposed to be doing here. I'm sorry, but I can't stand you talking to me about salvation when that's all I'm trying to achieve. I'm trying to protect us. I'm trying to do so much good, and you act as if I'm evil or something.
Adelina takes a step forward, her arms open for a hug. But something causes her to retreat and take a step back. Her shoulders bounce as she starts to cry. My arms immediately wrap around her and we embrace.
What's wrong? Why isn't Marina in the cafeteria?
We turn to see Sister Dora with her arms crossed over her chest. A copper crucifix hangs over her wrists.
Go, Adelina whispers. We'll talk about this later.
I wipe my face and rush past Sister Dora. As I leave the nave, I can hear snippets of a heated argument brewing between Sister Dora and Adelina, their voices echoing off the vaulted ceiling, and I run my hands through my hair in hope. Before sneaking back into the sleeping quarters last night, I floated the chest down the narrow, dark hallway to the left of the nave, past the ancient statues cut into the rock wall. It now sits hidden atop the narrow tower of the north belfry, secure behind the padlocked oak door. It's safe there for the moment, but if I can't convince Adelina to open it with me soon, I'll have to find another location. Ella is nowhere to be found in the cafeteria, and I worry that my legacy has somehow backfired and she's at the hospital.
She's in Sister Lucia's office,
a girl says when I ask the girls at the table nearest the door.
There was a married couple with her. I think they're going to adopt her or something.
She pours a spoonful of soggy eggs onto her plate.
So lucky.
My knees buckle, and I catch myself from falling to the ground by gripping the edge of the table. I have no right to be so upset at the thought of Ella leaving the orphanage, but she's my one friend. Of course I knew she would be on the sisters' short list of adoptable girls. Ella is 7, and sweet, and cute, and wonderful to be around. I truly hope she finds a home, especially after losing her parents. But I'm not ready to let her go, regardless of how selfish it is. It was determined, when Adelina and I arrived, that I'd never be adopted. But I sit there now wondering if it might have been better if I was eligible. Maybe someone would have fallen in love with me. I realize that even if Ella is adopted today, it'll take some time for all the paperwork to be reviewed and accepted, which means she'll be here a week, maybe 2, maybe 3. But it still breaks my heart and makes me even more determined to leave this place as soon as I get the chest opened. I slump out of the cafeteria and find my coat, then sneak through the double doors and march down the hill, not caring that I'm skipping school. I keep an eye out for the man with the Pittacus book, staying on the sidewalk behind the vendors on Calle Principal, bouncing from shadow to shadow. As I walk past El Pescador, the village restaurant, I look down the cobblestone alley and see the lid of a trash can teeter and then crash to the ground. The trash can itself begins to quake and wobble, and I hear something scraping at its insides. A pair of black and white paws curl over the lip of the can. It's a cat, and when he struggles over the edge and lands on the alley floor, I see a long gash running along his right side. An eye is swollen shut. It looks as though he's about to fall over from exhaustion or starvation, and he just lies in a pile of trash as if he's given up. "You poor thing," I say. I know I'm going to heal him before I take my first step down the alley. He purrs when I kneel down next to him, and when I place my hand on his fur, there isn't resistance. The iciness flows quickly from me to the cat, quicker than it did to Ella or my own cheek, and I don't know if the legacy is getting stronger or if it works faster on animals. His legs straighten and paws spread wide, and his breathing picks up until it melts into a loud purr. I gently turn the cat over to inspect his right side and see that it's completely healed and covered with a lush coat of black fur. The eye that was swollen shut is now open and looking up at me. I name him Legacy and say, "If you want a ride out of town, Legacy, then we should talk, because I think I'm leaving soon and I could use the company." I'm startled by a figure appearing at the end of the alley. But it's just Hector, pushing his mother in the wheelchair.
"Ah, Marina of the Sea," he yells.
"Hi, Hector Ricardo."
I walk towards them. His mother looks slumped and distant, and I worry she's gotten worse.
"Who is your friend? Hello, little man."
Hector bends down to scratch Legacy's chin. "Just some company I've picked up along the way." We walk quietly, chatting about the weather and Legacy, until arriving at Hector and his mother's front door.
"Hector, have you seen the man with the mustache and book at the cafe recently?"
"No, I have not," he says.
"What is it about this man that bothers you so much?"
I pause. "He just looks like somebody I know."
"Is that everything?"
"Yes." He can tell I'm lying, but also knows enough not to pry. I know he'll be on the lookout for the man I believe is a Mogadorian. I just hope he doesn't get hurt.
"It was good to see you, Marina. Remember that today is a school day."
He winks. I nod sheepishly, and he unlocks his front door, backing inside, pulling his sick mother along with him. The coast is clear over my shoulder, and I continue with my walk for a little while, thinking about the chest, when I will be able to talk again with Adelina.
I also think about John Smith on the run. Ella and her possible adoption. My fight last night in the nave.